This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. Well, where to begin? Where to begin? I guess the first thing I should point out is I am so happy and proud and honored and flattered and surprised and all of these possible adjectives that you could imagine like that to find out that just recently I was nominated as the best podcaster for a new category that's going to be for online special awards at FISM this year in Turin. Oh my goodness, that was a surprise. And then right behind that, After I found that out, I was notified, oh, by the way, you also got best newsletter for the pod letter that I have been putting out for the past several years. I was just doing that for fun, and I'm so glad that actually it's been noticed and has been nominated for an award. I'm not sure what algorithms they're using, but I appreciate the judges or whoever had actually noticed the podcast and the newsletter, or as I call it, a pod letter. Thank them very much for putting me into this category. And again, this is just amazing. And I want to thank all of you listeners for making this happen, because you're the ones who come back week after week and listen to these podcasts, whether they are about conversations with people who are friends of mine and people in the magic community, or whether it's going to be a report on a convention that I'm attending. It's just been a lot of fun for me, and apparently that has been shining through. Well, the job is not yet done, because as I understand it, this is now, since it has been nominated, now has the next step to do, and that is for you to vote. Apparently, this is something that once it's been nominated, then there are it's up to the rest of the world to decide which they should be voting for and which one they think is worthy of winning this prestigious award. So let me suggest, if you will, please, there's the pod letter, if you subscribe to that each week, and I had put the one out this week that there's a link there. You just click on that. It will take you to the FISM website. There's a special link where that you can vote on these awards and others. And if not, if you just go to themagicwordpodcast.com, there you will see a link also that will be, depending upon whether you're looking at it on your laptop or whether you're looking at it on your phone or iPad or whatever, there is a link there that would say you can click here to vote. So please do, and that will help push me to the top. And I appreciate you not only listening, but also for your support with your vote. That would be greatly appreciated. Again, for both categories, one is the best podcaster, and number two is for the best newsletter. Thank you guys very much, guys and gals. This is, oh gosh, really, really exciting news. So thank you, thank you, thank you. Also, I want to point out that this week's episode is sponsored by the Portland Magic Jam, which is going to be April the 4th through the 6th in Portland, Oregon. And there will be more information about that in this podcast. And I appreciate them being a sponsor this week. And you can also go to the Magic Convention Guide, where you can hear a more in-depth conversation with Greg Moreland, who is one who is in charge of putting this together along with his team. And he'll give you more information over there. So again, go check out the information on the Portland Magic Jam. And if you happen to be anywhere up in the northeastern U.S., I recommend that you go and check it out and attend there this year. Well, this week's episode will feature Marvin Berglas, and I am so glad we had a chance to sit down, because it's been a number of years that we've been trying to get this taken care of, and he's always been busy, or we haven't been together where we could actually chat about this. So anyhow, when we were at Blackpool, we had a chance actually to go, when I visited his hotel, we went to the room and where it was quiet, and I had his attention, and we could talk at length, and so that was really great. Marvin, as many of you know, is not only the son of David Berglas, who is known as the International Man of Mystery, which makes him the International Son of Mystery, I guess, but also, as many of you might know, he is also the president of the Magic Circle. He was elected that back in 2023. He is a member of the Inner Magic Circle with Gold Star, and he, of course, then owns Marvin's Magic, and he had received a medal, actually a gold medal, as a winner of the Toy of the Year in the electronics game category by the Independent Toy Awards for his Marvin's Magic iMagic. He has also received the Masculine Award from the Magic Circle and for service to Magic, and he was also the resident magician, the first resident magician for the Premier League at Arsenal Football Club since 1993. Pretty impressive. He is someone to be reckoned with, certainly, and he looks like if he wasn't doing this, he could probably be a male model. He's one of the most handsome men I've ever seen. I mean, he's sort of got George Clooney looks. I mean, what a guy. And very well spoken and has just a lot to share with us here this week. We talk a lot about his company, the Marvin's Magic, as well as his father, and also about the Magic Circle. So a lot to cover here this week. So I'm going to step aside and introduce you to our guest this week and let you hear it from the man himself. Please welcome my guest, Mr. Marvin Berglas, here on The Magic Word. Today, I am with someone who is, I started to say, I guess in a way, kind of a follow-up to a conversation that I had with his father some years ago. And so we are continuing a conversation with someone who is a not only noted figure in magic, but someone who is a mover and shaker and really helps the magic community and inspires young people to get involved and has been successful in many areas of magic and is most well known in the United Kingdom for his shops, but the magic shops are international, and he is also the president of the Magic Circle currently, and he is a performer and a writer as well. And someone who if you haven't had a chance to talk with him, I mean, it's just been an honor to have him as a friend and to finally get a chance to sit down because we've been kind of postponing this for quite some time. Please welcome my guest. Here he is, Mr. Marvin Berglas. Hello, Marvin. How are you?
Hey, great to be here. Nice to do this.
Marvin's Magic is the name of the magic shop, I guess. And basically,
well, it's not a shop. It's actually a brand now.
Okay.
You know, it started off maybe as a shop within a shop. In 1987, through an idea of mine to make magic a little bit more accessible, and Hamleys of Regent Street is known as the finest toy shop in the world, and this was in London, and I was a demonstrator in there on non-magic products, art and craft products, and just enjoyed that type of thing. We had, you know, a couple of good businesses already, even in my early 20s. But back in 1987, they used to be very famous for magic, yet it was ailing in the 80s. And they said, you know, you must know a bit about magic. Can you give us any ideas? And sort of light bulb moment, really. I just thought, hey, you know what? Leave it with me. And then I sort of thought, I came up with really great packaging. How would I like to see if I was just getting into magic? Really good packaging, really good products,
right?
Fantastic demonstrators, and get a real magic shop energy going. So we launched that in Hamleys Inn, and they had 6 stores at the time. In London is their flagship store. It was all around the world, all around Britain.
Now, Hamleys is a department store.
It's
is
actually
that
just
a,
it's
like a Macy's,
exclusively toys. So it'd be like
F.A.O. Schwartz.
It'll be like F.A.O. Schwartz. It's 6 floors. It's on prime Regent Street location. We had a really big area and still have to this day on the ground floor. In fact, we probably employ about 12 people in that store every day because we run several different demonstrations. But from there, it went to Harrods. Harrods, which is another very well-known big store here in the UK. And then internationally, nowadays we're in 64 different countries around the world. Mm-hmm. We run the magic shop for FAO Schwartz in New York, and that does very well. We probably have about 20 people a day who work there because we do all their various demonstrations. Mm-hmm. And we have Marvin's Magic areas and shops in Rome, in Milan, in Dubai. Have done them in India, in China, all sorts of places.
You know?
Yeah. But basically, that's how we started. But there's three sort of sides to the business, Scott. The demonstration side, which is what we call the in-stores. But from that, we built up our brand, and we're in sort of department stores and supermarkets and places like that, mm-hmm. or Costco's, those sort of locations. And our third business, section of the business really was after COVID, which was online, and now that's about a third of our business.
Hey, I know you've got an app then also. Is that something that's part of that online business, or is that something that's part of the...
Well, that's your basically for all
your
products.
Line.
Yeah, I mean, we came up with a product called Marvin's Eye Magic, which won various awards a few years ago, and it included augmented reality and that type of thing. So, in other words, mm-hmm. it was a magic set that would work on its own with really great props, but if you use them in conjunction with the app, it went that much further that you could do some really cool, innovative things. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, we had, instead of paddles, we had paddles with three-dimensional flies on them. So we'd say, this is an apple fly swat or something, and it was blank, and then you could get a fly out of the air, make him jump, do all the party tricks, but then you could put him into your phone, and he would fly and buzz around in your phone.
Oh, cool.
And it was really good. And then you could... blow on it and it would freeze over like your car windscreen in the winter, mm-hmm. and you'd rub on the screen and now it would rub off, you'd reveal the fly is now inside an ice cube digitally inside your phone, and then the next thing you put your phone above a glass and you shake your phone and a real ice cube, well, a plastic ice cube with a fly drops out. So that's what I'm saying, how we would, that would be one example of how we would use augmented reality with the physical prop. And it was really successful.
I have so many questions. I don't know if we're going to be able to contain this within an hour. Oh, my goodness. That you've opened up so many things that we haven't even begun about, so many other things that are fantastic about your background, too. But on that, what about my first question is, you're talking about the creation of that. Do you have a band of creators or people submit ideas to you about what if you do this or that? Or do you have a brain trust group that you go to and say, hey, guys, what do you think? And you got 3 to 6 guys. Or is it like a 10-year kind of a thing? Or how do you?
It's actually mainly, I mean, I've got a good background knowledge of magic, and I work very closely with a guy called Justin Monaghan, who's my creative director. He's been with me since he was 15, 16, 17, when he was, a young magician. And he's a great designer. And we brainstorm on a lot of things. And then we bring in... experts as needed, So we have a lot of friends in the industry who come to us with ideas, and if it's the right sort of thing for a project we're doing, we gladly work on that. And we encourage you, in fact, any of your listeners, if they've got anything which they think would work really well in the public sector rather than the magician sector,
right.
That which means it's got a certain criteria. It has to be some sort of gimmick. It has to be almost self-working. It has to have a start, a middle, and a finish. Mm-hmm. And can be done on repeat, surrounded. That's the criteria.
So you're looking for something that's going to be also, again, geared for all ages, as opposed to saying, here's something that if you're 18 or older, because there's some memorization or whatever, but you want to have something that's going to be
our products, we've got several... Now we have several age groups that we work with. We encourage the magicians of tomorrow. So they start off with what we call our Marvin's Magic Made Easy, which is really, colourful props, in a big scale for small hands, purposely the right sort of thing, either in wood or plastic. It's really nice. And then we go on to what we call the Ultimate Magic range, which is really, really mm-hmm. nicely packaged and great innovative stuff that we might combine with our apps. And then it goes actually into executive magic as well. So we cover all things,
And these things are made in the US? They're made in the UK, they're made overseas, or different kits
now,
are made in different places?
Well, when we first started, I was literally importing any ideas from all around the world and collating it in our warehouses in the UK. But these days, it's all collated in the Far East for us, exactly under our you know, as we need it.
Your strict guidelines of how you want it. Do you go over there from time to time?
I do, yeah. The sourcing is not...
Do you speak any Mandarin or anything?
No,
or?
I don't.
Okay.
I was more on the sales side and the branding and the marketing side. The sourcing side, whilst I'm interested in, you know, we have other people in our organization who would work closely with that. It's not something, you know, I think you can only do so many things, you know, and I enjoyed doing a lot of... when I was younger, a lot of traveling, especially in the States, a lot of TV shopping. I did 136 hours of live TV on QVC in the US and built up a brand that way through there. And
selling magic there.
Yeah,
too.
Selling Marvin's Magic. Yeah, it was really interesting actually, because it went from having a magic shop, you know, in one area, you know, to then getting the brand when a retailer comes and wants it in all their shops, and then you get known, and one thing leads to another. And
sure.
we TV shopping in the UK, QVC opened, I think, in 1994, and it was pretty boring to watch because it was very much, you know, some jewelry. Can you see it sparkling? Can you see it now if I do that? So they wanted to attract what they call new names, people watching it. So we used to have a 2-hour regular slot on a Sunday afternoon, selling our magic sets, and it was entertaining. They got a lot of people into that, and it went so well that they're based in Philadelphia, and with the biggest live studio in the world, and we earned our opportunity to do a 2 1-hour shows in QVC called Marvin's Magic with Marvin Berglas, and it was frightening, but it was great.
How'd sales go?
Well, let me tell you, it was like heart in the mouth type of situation, because in those days, you know, we weren't that experienced, and it was a big opportunity, and the criteria was that we had to package each item individually, label it individually, rather like you would do for mail order or for online stuff now, then ship it over there at our cost, great cost to do that.
Yeah,
and
postage is way expensive.
And the thing is, if it didn't sell, it was all coming back to us. It was sell or return. So that was a big risk.
And customs, I guess, and everything to have to deal with.
Oh, I mean, we're talking about container loads of stuff, because they're going to take thousands of dollars per minute to justify the airtime.
Wow.
The magic was okay, but we had this art and craft product called the Magic Drawing Board, which is where I started off doing, which is I had a bit of a knack to do this sort of art and craft thing. It looked like magic, and it really went crazy. And it was called Marvin's Magic, and they bought... I mean, these are obscene amounts, which I look back at, but you know, you need sort of some magic moments in your career. But, you know, they bought, I think, like 10 times what we would have sold, let's say, in the UK. So they bought about 8,000 for the first show and 10,000 for the second show of this one item.
Mm-hmm.
And I sold all 18,000 of them in 4 minutes.
4 minutes?
Yeah, they had 1,000 people on the switchboard, and it lit up the switchboard, and it was record sales for them. So they just said, this is unbelievable. How quick, in fact, it was probably a lot more successful than magic at that time. So, but they kept on pushing more and more. In fact, we went on to how quickly can you get some more in? We got 36,000, which is a container load in.
Right.
Then 54,000, 90. My record was 93,000 units in 1 weekend.
In 1 weekend.
Yeah.
And so, amazing.
So as a result of that, I mean, these things don't happen overnight. You know, it was just right place, right time, worked really hard.
Well, I was going to say, was that during the holidays? I mean, when people were actually looking for gifts for their kids or something?
Well, you know, it's prime time. You know, it was like November, December.
Okay, sure.
But we did this for a period of 2 or 3 years, every few months. You know, we'd go back on there because it was... They liked it. It was entertaining. It was successful selling, and as a result of that, they partnered with us on that product to do what they call these direct store, direct TV infomercials or direct TV commercials, which is like where they took the airtime, put it on all the kids' shows, and our name and brand, talking about, you know, like around about 2000, 2001, was massive based on this one product. And that helped build our brand. So that's how we got into...
And in the U.S., aside from getting that through QVC, where was that sold? And what retail stores
were
handling it?
Like all the big stores would have it, because it wasn't sold through us. It was sold through... people who would sell into Macy's, Bloomingdale's, Bed Bath Beyond, whatever. They would, you know, it was a massive big thing. All the bookstores, Barnes & Noble, all that type of thing. They would take this product, you know.
I know that I saw it from time to time in a few different places. Is the magic the same in the kits, whether it's being sold in Dubai or whether it's being sold in London or whether it's going to be sold in Jakarta? Or
obviously, language is a key issue. So exactly. That's our app now is really great because you would scan, for example, the internal secret barcode, and then you would have access to a whole video demonstrations in different languages. And so we work really hard on these types of things. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And in that case, each of the boxes, I guess, are branded with the local native language. Is that right for the countries?
It depends. You know, probably they would have to justify a certain run, you know.
Sure, of course.
But you know, some would be okay with UK packaging, and then, you know, different languages, French, Italian, German, whatever, Spanish. And then others would be required, for example, Canada, you need dual language, you know, on it. And it's different scenarios. At that
same thing with the instruction books.
Yeah,
and
at that stage, that's when it becomes, it's not just, you know, you're not just selling a product. It's a whole logistical thing where we need
the trick is the trick as far as the sleight of hand and the box and whatever the colors.
It's more getting it into the stores and giving them the service and that they require and all that, which is the whole different ballgame, which is why we have, you know, warehouse, commercial people, financial people, all different people helping in different ways.
Have you found, and I'm sure you have, some different number of sales that are better or worse in some countries for one particular trick or another because it may be seen as being maybe too mystical or
I think in the same way in the States that, you know, Deep South is probably magic's not very good. In the same way in certain Middle Eastern countries, the word magic isn't very good. So there are local things, but generally, you know, the States and the UK is our biggest market.
Mm-hmm. And so, again, I was talking about the different countries. I assume then you have different dealers, places where these are sold, where you have different demonstrators, so I'm trying to say.
Yeah, demonstration isn't the core part of our business.
You said it's one of the three-pronged.
Yeah, it's one, and it would have to be in a really high profile and big tourist location, like, for example, you know, as I said, F.A. Schwartz and Rockefeller Plaza is a huge, you know, we have a big area in there, and there's a lot of traffic that goes in there every day. So, but you couldn't just sort of, you know, it's the training that's required and the management and all that sort of. It's hard game.
Remember Magic Masters, and I've forgotten the gentleman's name who has since passed.
Yeah.
But he had a really high-end type of clientele, and he would be in these nicer places that were kind of bespoke type of.
Is that you're talking about the ones like where Dave Williamson was doing Rocky Raccoon?
Yes.
Yeah, Dave's a great guy, isn't he? And he's a great demonstrator. In fact, it was his demonstration in store that so many people copied. It was great. Yeah.
We work
with some high-profile people like Dave and Michael Amar of these, and Kevin James. We've done various tie-ups with those guys, you know, and Richard Wiseman here in the UK, and it's some.
And do they shoot commercials for you?
No, with Kevin, we worked on his Living Hand. We had a product called Freaky Body Illusions, which was a really popular item, which we put on TV and did a lot of things, and with all bodies, you know, stuff. And we brought them over to, you know, for the launch and stuff. But we did a whole big thing on that. And I think Michael Amar back in the day came on QVC with me once. But he's so polite, you know. I mean, he won't mind me telling you this story. I mean, I had done a lot of hours.
Okay.
And, you know, when time is money on QVC. And so the guy knew him of him and said, "Hey, Mike, how are you?" And he's, you know, he's got a lovely southern drink. "Yeah, I'm fine. Really great." And then meanwhile, there's a really big close-up of his hands, like for about 10 seconds, you know, which are big, sort of filling up the whole screen. I'm thinking, come on, Mike, get it moving. You've got to get these things, you know, you've got to be work. You've got to be talking. And there's a whole technique of doing all of that, talking and things. But it's interesting. You learn all these things as you go along.
I remember talking to Michael one time. We were sitting in my house and we had a long chat. And one of the things we discussed was about how that he had done this infomercial and about how expensive that it was, and ultimately at the end seems like that he ended up not netting anything because of having to pay for the camera, the crew, the studio and everything else, and then the promotion of this. But it was shown a lot of places, and it was like a 1-hour infomercial or something. So infomercials are a whole lot different than the QVC that's going on all the time.
But yeah, we did, as I said, but that we've moved on. Things have changed. Now it's, you know, online is huge, and it's all different things. It's interesting. You just go with the, you know, when you got a brand, you go with the flow, and doors open in different ways, you know.
Yeah, well, and that brings me to a point. I was just reading something recently There's a fellow, Rory, I can't remember his last name. He's got an email comes out regularly. It's called One Ahead Magic. And he was talking about the changes in magic kits being more organic rather than having colorful plastic type of or little toy type things. It might be something that is more organic, of which you're using paper and maybe string instead of a rope or whatever else. I mean, something that you would have more accessible, I guess, as opposed to something like, look at this cups and balls or these little linking rings or something. I mean, the days of the linking rings, I would think, in a magic kit are not necessarily they're gone, but I mean, I don't think that they would be as popular today as, I mean, you tell me. I mean, what?
Well, you know, I mean,
there's been a shift.
You could, yeah, like, for example, when we started in the 80s, the style was very much, you know, dragon motifs, Chinese, you know, frilly shirts,
exactly,
and velvet jacket. Things have changed. Before, in the 40s, top hat and tails, you know.
Right.
And nowadays, obviously, then we had the whole sort of street magic type thing with, you know, where Blaine was really popularized that, and mm-hmm. it's sort of baseball cap type of things and cool. But, you know, I think there's always a classic magic. It's very important to get that across. Mm-hmm. But we do, mm-hmm. for example, I mentioned our eye magic. That was a lot of things relating to everyday objects and phones and that. So even for example, the lights from anywhere, like, which is like a Delights type of thing where you could pluck it out of the sky. We could put it into our phone and make it charge your battery, for example, appear to charge mm-hmm. your battery. So,
like that.
Yeah, so there's many things of that nature that have changed. But we also work very much in different materials as well. Like, for example, our young set now is a beautiful box set, which is all made of wood, and it's just really a lovely coffee table mm-hmm. sort of thing that hopefully the kids would keep for a long time and remember their journey
right.
in magic. We feel it's really important that their first experience in magic is a good one, and then hopefully then they want the next thing and they develop, and that's how we've built our business based on that.
How do you handle something that somebody says, well, that was my idea, and they come back to you maybe later and say, well, I want royalties for this or
that. Never had
that
in my life.
Never had any problem.
No, we're a very ethical company. We mm-hmm. basically, firstly, we work very closely. We know what's out there. We do our own thing. And if we like someone else's idea, we would approach them and work with them to, mm-hmm. you know, either in royalty or a buyout or whatever, you know. But it's a big difference about an item going into a magic set when it's one of 80 components in there as a value, because there's lots of different things we could put in there. Mm-hmm. So we're not going to put something in which would cause any problems. But likewise, if it's a demonstration item, then it has to be something that really, it's really hard to come up with a demonstration item. And that would love to hear from anybody who's got anything that they think would really sell well. Think dynamic coins, think Svengali cars, think the lights from anywhere. Mm-hmm. These are classics, you know. And it's tough to get those. But we're always on the lookout for
those. Yeah, I was wondering just if you saw something well, like right now we're at the Blackpool Convention, in which you might see something and then take the guy aside and say, I like that. Is there a possibility that we can mass market that?
Sure. The way it would normally work would be we would encourage, you know, if it's sold into the magic community, that normally things are sold quite high prices, and we would say milk that, you know,
yeah.
there's going to be a demand curve which goes a spike, and then after a while is what's new.
What's next, right?
Exactly. That's how, unfortunately, that. But once they've made, you know, as much as they can from it, if it was something we really like, then we would perhaps approach and we would see if there's, you know, room for all parties to be happy, you know.
Mm-hmm. And with that, again, I guess that goes back to what I was asking about with your brain trust about different people you've got who come up with the ideas, that this way, I guess they're on the lookout. So if you do see things, and of course, then you're wide open, just you say, if people are listening to this and you've got an idea of something that you'd like to see marketed.
By all means, come to us. I mean, you know, we get tons of ideas all the time, but they're not necessary. It's got to work with if we're developing a product at that time for a customer, etc. We've done some really fantastic niche products and, you know, and some really clever things, but they're not always the most successful, surprisingly.
So you end up not doing anything with them?
Well, you do something, you make them, but for example, one fun one we had, I worked with Erno Rubik, the inventor of Rubik Cube. He came to us on their 40th anniversary and we put together a set, which was a giant, the box was a giant Rubik's Cube, and inside was everything cube related, no cube itself, but for example, instead of, you know, that trick which is the shrinking dice into minimal yes. ones, we said, well, how quickly can you solve a dice, put it in this little, can you solve a cube? This is the smallest one you'll ever see. That's why we put it in this museum curated little cabinet. Can you see it? What the world record for an solving the dice is 3.4 seconds, but watch, 1, 2, 3, and then you just shake it and it would be from unsolved to solved.
Mm-hmm.
Or the same prop could be used from a mini cube to a micro little lots of cubes. So it's just lots of fun things like that, you know, finding themes and developing them and stuff like that.
Well,
and they were really happy with it, and that was great. But the point I was saying, Scott, was it doesn't necessarily, you know, we've come up with some really clever things that you would think are fantastic. Often the method's cleverer than the effect, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's commercially viable. You know, sometimes it's based on price and packaging and all that type of thing. Yeah.
Now, Tenio comes out with things, I alluded to them a little bit earlier, like each year. They'll say, okay, here are 13 different items or whatever that for the year. And they've got people kind of work on this all year long. And then finally, then whenever they introduce something like that, yours is an ongoing thing, I assume, as opposed to general release.
That's, you know, we do have some general releases, but generally that would be, they are doing slightly higher price point individual tricks specifically for their market and for their collectors, whereas our products, you know, we have all the different price points and we work with all different retailers, so we work with their time scales. Historically, we'd be at trade fairs, you know, doing marketing stuff from November, December, showing them ideas at the trade fairs, which we do in Hong Kong, in London, in Germany, in New York, in Australia, seeing all our customers, all our buyers, giving them ideas of what we're coming up with next. If they like it, they would then commit probably by March, April, give us the orders, and we'd then have maybe June, July to manufacture it, get it to them by September, ready for them to sell at Christmas. So always working a year ahead.
Right. Well, I guess that's true. It's like, again, when people go to, and I say people, I mean retailers are going to a Halloween trade show. I mean, it's a long way from Halloween. You're going like in January or February to buy your things for October.
Yeah.
And the same thing, I'm sure that...
probably even longer in the toy business, yeah.
That's what I would think.
Same with fashion as well, yeah.
Now, I assume that they have the toy store shows all over the world. It's not just in Vegas. So.
No, the big one is the biggest is in Nuremberg in Germany, which is, you know, each hall is huge, and I think it's 13 or 14 halls. If you were to walk each of those halls, you've walked more than a marathon. You know,
wow,
it's crazy busy. And then London's a big one, and then New York and Javits. There's one. Those are the sort of three major ones. Mm-hmm. Used to be in Hong Kong as well, but that's a side of the business these days. You know, we're involved in a lot of very interesting things. I like to put magic where it hasn't been before. For example, I put it on airlines. You know, I had for British Airways, we had a Marvin's Magic snack box, you know. So it's basically a little box with snacky stuff, but it was actually a little stage where you could use augmented reality, and inside was little magic props, and it was a pop-out stuff, and that kept the kids happy. And that's like, and we put it into different airlines. My story was that we put it into KLM, Swiss Air, and Finnair, which is the Finnish airline.
Which haven't been in Virgin Atlantic. I mean, you got Sir Branson. Okay.
We've done Virgin as well. But what my story was that we put magic in there because we'd like to see magic disappear into Finnair.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, sorry. My magic's better than my comedy. Don't worry about that.
Yeah, you got people for that.
Okay. We've done that. We've worked with people like KFC where they've done Marvin's Magic promotions and stuff. Mm-hmm. We've been on taxis, we've been on billboards, and it's just really exciting. When I look back, I mean, 37 years, we've done a lot of different things, and that's really what the brand's about, you know.
Wow.
But ultimately, I still love performing. I still love being, I'm steeped in magic. Obviously come from a famous magical family, so it's been, I've grown up with it, but I love it to bits, and I'm still just as motivated today as ever.
And now, a word from our sponsor. Portland Magic Jam, coming up on April the 4th through the 6th of 2025. And folks, that is just right around the corner. You want to be sure and check this out. I've got with me right now the organizer who's putting this all together to give us just a little bit on some of the details on this convention. And that's Greg Moreland. Hi there, Greg.
Hello, sir. Glad to talk about this event.
Thank you. I'm glad that you were available. And so this is going to be in Portland, Oregon, up in the Great Northwest. And so tell me a little bit about getting in and out of there. What's the, as far as the airport?
airport and hotel and some information about that.
People coming in from outside of Oregon that are going to fly there. We are 400 yards from PDX, from Portland Airport.
Wow.
So, yeah, people coming from that are flying in, bam, just take the shuttle over, the Sheraton Inn shuttle. And just real simple. And then everything happens under one roof, under the Sheraton. All the lectures, the close-up show, the evening shows, the panel discussions, the contest. Everything happens there under one roof. So even people from Portland sometimes get a hotel room because they pull their car up on Friday and they don't leave the place till Sunday.
Because you got free parking too, right?
And free parking, yeah.
Don't want to discount that. And I assume free internet and everything then too. So
that's right.
What a deal.
This has been going on 15 years. And it's really 150 magicians is a nice number to have there. Everybody gets to, you kind of eventually get FaceTime with all the headliners.
Right. And you can also hang out there in the Gerryandris session room?
Right. Some people, the main thing they like is a chance to hang out with other magicians. And I make sure and put just the right amount of time in between events so there's hangout time.
And just real quick before we close, just if you will give us the people who are going to be the headliners this year.
Well, this year we've got two Erics and two Johns. Eric Jones, Eric Tate. John Gustafaro and John Armstrong.
Sounds like a great lineup and also a great opportunity. Again, kind of keeping it small, about 10 dealers or so, I understand.
Yeah, small dealer room, 10 dealers. And by the way, all four headliners, you're going to see them all, each one of them do a lecture, each one of them do something, the close up around Robin, each do something in the evening show, and they'll all be part of the panel discussion.
Sounds fantastic. So where do people go to register and for more information or to get a link to the hotel?
At PortlandMagicJam.com or for short, PDXMagicJam.com. I got the shortened version because I got tired of typing it. So PDXMagicJam.com. All the information is there. Hotel, registration, schedule, blurbs about the headliners, who we've had in the past. A lot of info there.
All right there in one place. Greg, thanks very much. I wish you good luck, and I'm sure we'll be just a marvelous convention up in the Great Northwest in Portland, Oregon, April the 4th through the 6th. Go check it out, everyone.
And now back to our conversation with Marvin Berglas.
I'm sure that your father, David Berglas, had, and whenever I was introducing you, that I kind of glossed over that. But I meant to say, of course, that you're the son of David Berglas. And he was featured on one of my special episodes, I think number 500 or 600 episode. But did he encourage you also or give you some ideas or say, hey, this is a good direction for you to go? Or,
well, you know, let's put it in perspective. In the UK, Dad was a star of magic and was the first guy to have his own series on British TV and stuff. So when we were kids, he was working hard on all around the world, and we didn't see that much of him in the early days. And he came off the air in the UK to give us a relatively normal background and childhood. And he worked in places like Holland, where he was the first TV overseas personality of the year. And I wasn't that interested, nor was my late brother, you know, at the time in magic. You tend to rebel against what you folks do, you
know. That's what I was thinking.
And it was, you know, so we were busy playing football and chasing girls and doing all sorts of things, you know.
Sure.
So it wasn't really our scene. But having said that, I got into it. I got a call from Dad at school when he had some products out, a trick pack of cards and a book. I got a call late in school when I was about 15 or 16 saying the guy who was going to this convention in Lyon in France has pulled out because he's ill. Is there any chance I could help, you know? And it was better than what I was doing at the time, which was geography, homework, very boring. So I jumped at it, and I really enjoyed it. And I seemed to get a bit of a buzz. Dad was really surprised how I sort of demonstrated and picked it up so quickly and had big crowds around me. And I think that really helped get me bitten by the bug. Then I saw how powerful magic can be. Gets you to the front of nightclub queues. You meet lots of people and it'd be the life and soul. And it was a great thing for a while. But the fact that I wasn't steeped in it since a childhood in terms of like a real, what we call in Britain, an anorak for it, I think it helped because I think I had a good idea of what the public's perception, you're competing not just for magic, but you compete against everything else. So that's why I wanted to really make it suitably different, exciting, to really get on. And touch wood, it's still going to this day.
And you were not involved, as you say, so much when you were a young person. So you didn't go and hang out at the studio or try to get behind the camera or the lights or try to get involved with the production side of it when your father was doing his TV shows.
We were fortunate that we were able to occasionally go with him and go and meet some, you know, famous people and his friends in show business. That was wonderful. He was on James Bond films.
Casino Royale.
Yeah, he was on 6 James Bond films. Octopussy.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and he did.
He was consultant for these? And he did. Pinewood Studios.
All over the place, yeah.
Okay.
And he also did Batman films and he's done stuff with Stanley Kubrick. So to occasionally go on a set and meet some Bond girls, as a 17-year-old, that was good fun, let me tell you.
It was.
Yeah. but you know what? It was great. But coming back to your original question, he said, great hobby, lousy profession. And I think he was trying to sort of say that because, you know, however good you are, you're waiting for that phone to ring for your next gig, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
And that's, you know, interesting. And I know a lot of people are doing well, but a lot of people, you know, it's stressful. Some people aren't good at the marketing, but they might be great at magic. Other people are great at magic, but they're not good at marketing. So I was quite pleased to sort of come up with the idea of products because as a performer, you can only be in one place at one time. But product-wise, obviously, you can be all over the place. And so I like to do both, really.
Mm-hmm. And it sounds like he kind of encouraged you then to... Well,
no, he wasn't. He wasn't that. I mean, obviously, I've got to give him the credit because if it wasn't for him, I probably wouldn't have even known about magic. But
yeah,
and that's when the Hamlet situation first came about, they said, well, you must know about magic. Assumption, but really, it was the entrepreneurial spirit in me which made it happen and took it from a concept to a company and a brand, eventually. So he was very, I think we were proud of each other and we reached the top in different ways, and it was really great. And I just did a radio interview yesterday with her, doing a big tribute for him on Radio 4 in Britain. And just hearing the love and the respect that people have for him. I mean, if anything, I was asked for it. Do I replicate his famous things, his any card at any number, his table of, and I wouldn't dream of it because that was him.
His thing. Sure.
It was, and I compared it to him being very opportunist and unconventional magician, self-taught, that he had his own methods and his own ways, and he was like a virtuoso musician, jazzing in different ways and wherever the mood takes him. And absolutely, I wouldn't want to be a poor version of that. But you know what? They say, in England, football, which I love, I would say, if your dad's David Beckham, it doesn't mean you play for England. I don't know if who's the equivalent. Do you know David Beckham?
Of course, I do. Yeah.
Okay, so it's the same thing. It's, you're open for comparisons, silver spoon. People
just expect that it kind of passed down to the next generation.
Yeah. So I worked harder in my own way to get to.
Well, that happens a lot in Hollywood, certainly with actors and actresses. Then that there are families of those. If you stop and think about Kirk Douglas and Mike Douglas, and there are so many other families that have gone on.
Kate Hudson, but you know what? I think, so what has definitely, I've got to give absolute credit for, was his attention to detail, his showmanship, knowing when to do a trick, when not to do a trick, the importance of it rather than just being a throwaway.
Your father, you mean?
My dad helped. So these things clearly must have rubbed off on me, not just for a performance of magic, but also in business.
And I was going to say in business as well, because you touched on something a little bit earlier about the importance of not just the performance, the business of performance, but the business of marketing. Mm-hmm. And some people can't do both, but he was just well skilled at that. I mean, like the blindfold walk through the city or different kinds of things that he would do in order to get attention, saying, oh, I got to go see this guy then, in days in which that years ago that Harry Houdini used to do an upside down straitjacket or something, and those days are gone, in which you then got television. But your father had figured out this other way then of using the media to help promote his shows.
I think he'd be the first to admit that he wasn't necessarily a self-publicist or marketer in that way. He wasn't egotistical in that respect. Mm. And those huge publicity stunts which he's done, including the one you mentioned where he was blindfolded and the newspaper or a magazine called Picture Post hid an object somewhere in London, and he was able to find it and retrace the route. That garnered amazing publicity, but it's again more luck than judgment how that came about. You know, he was a working young man at the time, and that magazine happened to be in the barber shop some couple of years later, and the head of TV happened to read through it and to get this guy in, and you know, so things. That's how I love sliding doors moments, and that's
was exactly
it.
What yeah. it was, sliding yeah. door moment.
Yeah,
yeah. Have you had many of those kinds of things happen in your life?
All the time. It yeah. happens all the time, and I, you thank God for it, but it's fun. But you know what? You make your own luck in life. You know.
I believe that.
And then one thing leads to another, and you know, and you should be humble and respectful and hopeful, but. It's things happen. If you're passionate about something, people want to be associated with you, like dealing with you, and hopefully that's how it works. And if you're a nice guy and you're reliable, that's very important, and sure. honourable, much more important. I'd rather sleep at night than chase the next
yeah.
buck, you know?
That's a very good point. We can't overlook the fact about how important your mother Ruth has been in all of this, of course, and being just the backbone, seems like, of the uh-huh. family, that is the unsung hero. And when I had dinner with your mom and dad so many years ago, with Banachek and Heidi and my wife too, the six of us just had a wonderful evening. And she was such a lovely, majestic woman to have her as a mother, who I'm sure just kind of kept you on the steady path.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, obviously, I was with her last night. She's now 91. Mm-hmm. She's very glamorous 91.
Yeah.
She was an actress. She went to RADA, the Royal Academy of Dramatic Art, with the likes of Joan Collins and Sheila Hancock and those, that era. And she has a sort of twinkle and sparkle in her eye, which is amazing. And obviously, I think she, you know, kept that under control. Mm-hmm. And obviously, you know, we're very lucky to have her in our lives, you know.
Right.
And she misses Dad greatly, I know that.
Of course.
You know.
Yeah. And so you were the only one who really went in then to magic. You had brothers and sisters?
Yeah, I had brother Peter, who's a year old. Unfortunately, he passed away about 10 or 11 years ago, which was a tragedy for the family, and you know, really affected us all in different ways. But he was a great guy, and he was, you know, really quite a good showman in different ways. He headed a whole big sales force of people in the educational business. Mm-hmm. And my younger sister, who's 10, 11 years younger than me, Irina, she's very theatrical as well. And there was a time when we all worked together. But yeah, it's just we're very family orientated. But, you know, mm-hmm. but it's not a family business. It's bigger than that. We've got a lot of people involved and things, you know.
Yeah. I kind of got away from a question I did want to ask a little bit earlier about the Marvin's magic and some of the tricks that you do. What has been a bestseller and one that is favorite for you that, well, first of all, what's been a bestseller? What's been
I think I mentioned the bestseller, which is that drawing board, because you can't beat those figures. I think we sold, believe it or not, over, you know, millions of units over a course of 2 or 3 years. Mm-hmm. To replicate that has been difficult, but we've had 2 or 3 attempts at it in different things, and they haven't been as successful, yet they've still been in the hundreds of thousands. So,
right.
So that's pretty good. Obviously, we did a nice big box for Costco the last 2 or 3 years in the States, which went worldwide, and things like those numbers are great when you get those. But just, you know, it's a combination of things. One of my favorites, I like some of the innovative stuff we had. When I was, I came up with a concept which called the executive magic, which was a little briefcase with various things in it. And it's really nice to hear people like Dynamo or Laura London, who's the chair of the Magic Circle. They started with these types of sets and carried mm-hmm. them around. And it really, I love it when I hear we've inspired not only hobbyists, but people who now become top professionals as well. Mm-hmm. We also had a lovely box, which was called the Magic Shop, did it about 1994. Where I involved my dad and also Ali Bongo, and we came up with some really lovely things with the late Anthony Owen and Mark Paul. We had great fun working with that. Mm-hmm. We had the Secret Box, which is a draw box, basically an empty box full of close-up magic, you know, and mm-hmm. That type of thing. And probably this eye magic, which we've done, is so innovative. It's got so many great things on it that I'm really proud of that, you know.
Have you had magic kits that are branded under somebody's name that's like, let's say, the Derren Brown kit or something that is actually manufactured by you, but people put their names on?
Yeah, people approach to do that quite often, you know, we tend not to do too much of that. We're more of our own brand, but you know, we can do it, mm-hmm. And have done it. It's interesting. We prefer to promote our name rather, because if it's, for example, if it was a magician putting their name to it, it's good for their
brand.
Commercials,
sure.
And their brand, but it might only be in that local country, or it might only be, so you know, it varies. But yeah,
I was just thinking about Marshall Brodeen. I remember him showing me in the basement all of these different magic kits that he'd put together. For here's the Siegfried and Roy kit, mm-hmm. here's the Lance Burton kit, you know, and all these different kinds of things that he had put together. But these guys had their names on. I just didn't know if he did things like that.
Yeah, then. We have done, you know, as I said, mm-hmm. we've done different things over the years with quite a few. Believe it or not, there was a kid in America who was probably 8 or 9 at the time, who had literally more views online than, you know, Nickelodeon and all that stuff.
Wow.
It was massive. It started off as a kid unwrapping toys, and it just got bigger and bigger and bigger. And we did some projects for him, and you know, it's things like that are great. But you know, we would only do that if they came to us, you know?
Have you had something in which that you thought, okay, this is going to be a great seller, and this, like, it just falls apart?
Many things, yeah. Come on, it's not, you know, let's be realistic about it, of course.
Yeah.
But we try not, you know, you learn with experience to mm-hmm. be more mindful. That's when, you know, someone very enthusiastic, you know, would come to you with an idea, or we'd come up with an idea. We try so hard, we put so much effort into it, and it doesn't necessarily equate. It's like a magic trick.
Sure.
You know, we all perform magic tricks, and I know that there's certain ones that get fantastic reactions that I do all the time, and there's others that I've been aspiring to do. And I learn and learn, and it might take me 2 or 3 years before it gets what I consider my A material enough to put it in my show.
Right.
And then when I do it, maybe it doesn't get the same reaction as something which is much easier, so it doesn't stay there. And that's basically what happens. You're always juggling with these things, you know?
Now, going in a completely different direction, I was going to ask you about the Magic Circle then, of course, with your father being a past president, and mm-hmm. you're the first father-son kind of legacy president of the circle.
I believe in 100 years, yes. I think the Maskelynes, there were in 1924, he took over, because there was basically 6 presidents, David Devant being the first, and Maskelyne Devant, obviously the forefathers of British magic, mm-hmm. and then there was the, you know, Earl of this and Duke of this, etc. And then a guy called Francis White, who was the secretary, who became the president for 31 years. Mm-hmm. And it was just, you know, the legacy. So my dad actually was the first, in 1989, was the first elected president. And he was there for 9 years. And then they changed the rules that is now a maximum of 5 years subsequently. So I was delighted to be I was a previous vice president. I was delighted to be elected by my peers. It's a sort of great feeling, mm-hmm. you know, to do that, because then, you know, it was pretty convincing and had some lovely messages from all around the world. And obviously I take it very seriously. And what was really great was that it was 3 months before Dad passed. So he was very proud
he
of me
saw
as
you.
Well. And
yeah,
he saw me.
Yeah.
So that really makes me feel special. And he was so instrumental in getting this fine building we have in
Stevenson
in,
Way.
Ian Stevenson mm-hmm. Way in Houston, with our theatre, our museum, our library, where we put on a whole range of events and stuff. So he made it resurge the interest, and I really wanted to do that again. And I know you came on last Monday. You can see that it's a really great atmosphere. It's a great buzz at the
place.
It
really is. It was a buzz. There was a feeling. There was something there that's like, that's why I was asking, is it this way all the time? Or are you saying, well, it's just starting to pick up again?
You know, I can't blow my own trumpet, because there's many people involved in it. But I like to think I'm a facilitator. I like to try and make things happen. And I've got a fantastic team of council who are really can do. I've got some great people around me, and we're really excited about, you know, many things. There's a lot of things bubbling behind the scenes, and already we've seen some great things, and I believe there's more to have. And you know what, it's, if you're not a member and you're a top magician, you should try and be, because it's the problem previously might have been, well, I'm not based in London and therefore, you know, I can't get to the club room that much. Well, you know what? Every lecture that we have is streamed live, so you can see it later or at the time. And you get the magazine and access to the magazine for over 100 years of magazines. And the community and the prestige of it, it's just a wonderful thing, you know.
You've touched on the word I was just about to use. What makes the Magic Circle the most, quote, most prestigious organization, magic organization?
You know what? It's like when you go on a club night, I mean, firstly, you're just not accepted to go. You have to get in, you have to pass. It's not just knowing, you know, some people.
You have to apply, and then they talk to you first before even an exam.
And then you do your exam. And that, can you imagine, you know, in front of all your peers, you know, in a room.
I never experienced that until the other night. When we were in the Devant room and there were like, what, 40 of us?
No, 70 of us.
70 of us?
70 people watching, you know, three different people doing a 10, 12 minute set. And, you know, it can't be easy, but it's challenging and you do it. And when you pass, it's a great feeling. You've passed, you know? Mm-hmm. And then the next stage is that if you pass that, you can get to become an associate of the Inner Magic Circle.
So when I was talking with Catherine Rhodes, she was saying there are different points, I guess, and you have to achieve a certain amount in order to even pass. And then from there that you could be an AIMC direct go into that, I believe.
Well, generally there's points, you know, for presentation and content and obviously the quality of your sleight of hand and just audience management. There's all those types of things that are taken into consideration. And once you pass, you're in. And then from there, you can do another exam later on to become an associate of the Inner Magic Circle with Silver Star. And then the big one is to become a member of the Inner Magic Circle with Gold Star, of which there are less than 300, I think, worldwide. And it's actually the president's prerogative to give that. So I'm very popular this year. Yeah.
I remember asking Ali Bongo one time about that. And I said, how does one become that? And he said, by not asking.
Yeah, that's it. You know what? It's really hard because obviously you know people, your mates and stuff, but I really try and I watch a lot of magic. I'm interested in magic worldwide and people obviously recommend it, different things, but it's difficult. You can't please everyone, but I think we've made some very popular choices recently.
And I know one of the only ways to get in is for someone to die, which leaves room because, as you say, there is just a finite number of people who are in there.
Yeah, it's not quite like that. There's still some gaps and stuff. But
I guess that's right, because if you don't renew your membership, then you kind of start over. Is that
right? No, not from that. No, it's just you know, there's some spaces. We've got a few. We're keeping an eye on a few people. We're watching you out there. Don't you worry about that.
Okay. Yeah, but it is a very prestigious thing to hold that honor, and certainly within the UK, if you have, when I would have on my card MIMC behind my name there, I mean, they know immediately. I mean, it's almost like an OBE, I guess.
Yeah, it's a great thing, yeah. It's a lovely thing to have.
Mm-hmm. Whereas that's not recognized so much in the United States, and the same thing, a lot of times, a lot of magicians, including myself in the past, they used to use a credential of saying a performer at the Magic Castle. Well, if I'm working in Texas, the Magic Castle means nothing to people.
Sure. You know, the best thing you can do to be remembered is do good magic and be a nice person.
Now that is great advice.
Yeah, it is. And I'll tell you what, I used to play a lot of football and I was a resident magician at Arsenal Football Club, which is the biggest, was the first resident magician in the Premier League. And it was 40, 50 gigs a year. All the top corporate people, it was great. And I got to know the players over the years. And it was a fabulous thing. I then got to play for their charity celebrity football team, playing with some of my ex-heroes and stars of the screen and sport, jockeys, boxers, cricketers, whatever. And so it's a wonderful thing I did for 16 years. Why am I telling you this? Because I recently went to our manager's funeral, his wife's funeral, sad occasion, of course. But we were reminiscing and we had such good banter and we were talking. They said, God, you're magic. They were talking about magic days that we used to do. And what this is, some advice that really helped me get this into perspective. They perhaps might not have remembered what you actually said, maybe even what you did, but they do remember how you made them feel. And I think with magic, I think that's what it's all about. And, you know, people can tell the difference between good and bad. They've got so many other influences around them. And if they really like something, you know, you're a very special person. And magic's such a wonderful thing, you know.
It really is. That's a good paraphrase of Maya Angelou, who had said, you know, people will remember about how you made them feel, yeah. certainly. Yeah. I remember talking with a friend of mine who had said he was performing for somebody, and it was in a cafe. And as he had gone out, they were talking. They seemed like they were three ladies, nice group. He started performing, and they just had a wonderful time. And they said, we just want to tell you, we thank you very much. This is our last meal with our mother. We're taking her to the hospital and wow. going in the hospice, and she's going to be gone probably in the next 10 days. Wow. But what you have made us feel and the memories that you've created then right now are something that we're going to cherish because we were having such a wonderful time, but you've only made that better.
Yeah, absolutely.
My point being, you never know when you're going to be touching somebody, certainly, and how right. you're going to make someone feel.
That's right. And whilst we might have done it 1,000 times, you know, that's why it's important to me that magic feels like it's been done for the first time, and the ad-libs sound like ad-libs as opposed to set lines. And it's just, you know, it just makes it so much more special when it's those right. types of occasions, you know.
Right, right. Well, and we all start as a child, and you all start with some sort of a little magic kit. It all starts at Christmas under the trees sometimes, you know, with just Marvin's magic kit.
Let's hope so.
Well, that's a good place, I think, to kind of wrap up things. The name of my podcast is called The Magic Word Podcast. So I always like to end by asking my guests what it is that's important. What's your word or phrase? What is it that's...
Three words normally. I used to do something at the Magic Circle called Rabbit and Revelations, and I would ask people three words. I hadn't thought about it, but I'll think about it now. First one for me, something that probably is passion. I think that's really important, mm-hmm. really, and positivity. I think is really important. But for me, also entrepreneurial. I think those three, put those three together, or blessed probably. I'm blessed because I've had a lovely family, health. Many friends in magic and all around, and I'm blessed.
And well, you certainly are. I mean, again, having come from just a lovely family, a lovely background, and you're living in a world in which that you are welcome, and you never know where one thing's going to lead to another, as you say, that one thing leads to another. You never know where it's going to go. Marvin, thanks very much.
Great
appreciate
pleasure.
Your time. It's been great. So until the next time, I appreciate that. Was Marvin Berglas. This is Scotty out.
I want to thank Marvin Berglas for being my guest here this week and for making time to chat with me. I thought it was quite revealing. A lot of interesting things that I didn't know, and hopefully you may have learned a thing or two there as well. So thank you again, Marvin, and thank you again, listeners, for helping to make me the... get this FISM nomination. That's pretty darn cool. And let me again invite you, if you would please, to make sure you go and vote. So this way we take it all the way to the top, all the way to Turin. And I would appreciate that. And also, if you have not subscribed to the Pod Letter, so you don't know what my newsletter is about, when you go to themagicwordpodcast.com where you can vote by clicking a link there, you can also subscribe to the Pod Letter. So this way that you get on the list, and each week we keep you up to date with who's on from week to week, and also some suggestions from the archives. And I also want to thank our sponsor this week, the Portland Magic Jam, and remind everyone, if you would go, please, and check out their website if you're going to be anywhere up in the northwest of the U.S., so this way you can attend this April 4th through the 6th. It promises to be a great one. And again, more information is on the Magic Convention Guide on the website at themagicwordpodcast.com. Well, we've had a lot chalked into this episode, and so we'll be back again next week with another great episode. So please come back and stay tuned. Until then, stay well, get booked, and remember to have passion, positivity, and remember that you are blessed. This is Scotty out.